KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro, in for Michael Krasny. If you've just started a diet to lose weight in the new year, Forum is about to sabotage your fledgling intention. We're talking about the rise of buttery pastries, kale Caesar salad on every other menu, uni on every other dish, and restaurants. What's hot, what's not, what's homegrown, or moving in from New York, or so tired we have to stick a fork in it because it is done. I don't need to tell you the Bay Area is one of the most vibrant food scenes in the world. You know that. And you know you need to eat out in 2014. So sit down, put on your bib, and take out your list of places to visit this year. We're talking about food this hour on Forum. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro, and today for Michael Krasny. The Bay Area didn't invent the foodie scene, but we have arguably perfected it in recent years, and it's your personal responsibility to maintain our reputation in 2014. Certain key questions require collective answers. Is there an ethnic cuisine that can topple our passion for Cal Ital? Is bar food now so good we can skip the move to a restaurant after cocktail hour? Are Burlingame and Oakland upping their games so much that those who don't live close by must visit? To start the conversational ball rolling, we've lined up a panel of leading local food writers, including Michael Bauer, the executive food and wine editor and restaurant critic for the San Francisco Chronicle. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And we have Carolyn Jung of foodgal.com. She also used to write for the San Jose Mercury News for 11 years, and she's the author of the book San Francisco Chef's Table. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
And Misha Holm, the local editor of the Zagat Bay Area Restaurant Guide. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So I thought I might just start this conversation by asking, what is the perennial appeal of the top 10 list, the top 100 list? Why do we constantly need to ask who's number one?
I think it's a way of limiting what you do. I mean, there's so many restaurants here. We've got more restaurants per capita than any other city. And I think by doing a top 10 or like I do a top 100 of the year, it kind of gives people a place to start.
Carolyn?
I think people also are attracted to concise, short these days. I mean, look at the love for Twitter. So I think it's an easy way for people to just grasp immediately with one look. Here are the places that really stood out. Here are the places that we need to get to.
I suppose, Misha, you could say that people use them as a map, a guide for, you know, exploring the world of Bay Area food.
Yeah, absolutely. The idea, it's your bucket list. It's the 100 dishes you need to try before you die. You know, the hyperbole aside, I think people like to know what, not only where should I go, but what should I order? I think that's the thing that people sometimes miss. You know, I did an article recently on the best must-try dishes at the top winning restaurants from the Zagat Guide. And I kind of believe that, of course, people should order what they want. That's the real answer. But getting to a top restaurant is just the first step. Figuring out what is the secret sauce at that restaurant or what's the dish that they're really known for, I think people really crave that because people don't have endless budgets. People don't usually go to a restaurant three times the way the Chronicle can afford to do. So they really want to know that when they go to that restaurant, how do they maximize that dining experience to get the killer experience?
Although I suppose a waiter, whether at a high-end restaurant or a budget joint, would say, well, what do you like? You know, Michael Bauer may have loved the crab here, but if you don't like crab, don't order the crab.
Absolutely. And a good waiter will feel you out the way a great waiter will feel you out with your wine taste. They want to know what type of wine you like before they're going to recommend a wine.
But many restaurants are known for a dish or two, you know, like the Zuni chicken, for example. So I think that's important to point out also.
It's interesting that you mentioned Zuni chicken. A lot of us are still grieving the passing of Zuni Cafe's Judy Rogers, who died really just a few weeks ago. And boy, was her signature dish that wonderful chicken. And we're seeing chicken everywhere on menus this year. I guess that's going to be one of the hallmarks of 2014?
I think so. I mean, one of my new favorites, which, Michael, you've written about too, is the Fog City Chicken. It's amazing. And I still think about it, and I tasted it months ago, but it's just succulent beyond belief, and it's just homey and comforting. So I think the chicken at many places appeals to a lot of people because it is something that we're all familiar with. And, you know, we cook with it at home and we may be tired of it, but if someone can elevate it and show us what chicken really can be, then it really stands out.
And April Broomfield at Tosca Cafe has also taken it to a new level because she does the chicken, but then she puts it on bread that's been soaked in the juices, and then she stuffs it in ricotta and other things, and she spreads that on the bread and then puts the chicken on top. And
okay, that's Friday night.
Spectacular too.
What about Saturday night, Michelle?
For chicken?
For chicken, yeah.
You know, I think I find it interesting the obsession with the fried chicken. You know, there's Charles Fong does wonderful fried chicken both at his Vietnamese restaurants like Slanted Door or Out the Door. But he's also doing one down at Hard Water that has more of a southern twang to it. You know, there's a place, Proposition Chicken, which pretty much sums it up. You know, it's all about fried chicken. There's all the Korean versions of fried chicken. And I think that's really interesting, too, that people do not tire of that kind of indulgent, snacky,
crispy, crunchy, tender in the middle.
Yeah, they may not, you know, be proud about wanting to go and get a bucket, but they do search it out. And I think that's a big hit on a lot of restaurant menus.
You know,
there
is one chef, though, who will not serve chicken on their menu.
Really?
Which is Lisa Dumani at Terra. She refuses to do so because she feels, hey, you guys all eat chicken at home. I don't want you ordering chicken here. I want you to think outside the box. So that's her
philosophy. And yet, I mean,
philosophy.
Fried chicken is kind of hard to do well at home unless you're
True.
A deep fryer uh-huh. maven, you know?
Absolutely. Arguably harder than roasting a chicken.
So there's something, fried chicken, I guess it's been with us for several years. You would think it would be dead by now. Somebody would have, you know, stuck a fork in that one. But no.
No, it's a classic, just like hamburgers and pizza.
And pork fat. I mean, is that still with us in 2014? Everything will be fried with pancetta or pork cheeks? Or
fortunately, pork belly is kind of on the demise, which is good.
Although I did notice that on the Bar Tartine menu, one of the things you can order as a kind of a snack precursor is lard with onions and paprika instead of putting butter on that amazing bread that they serve. And I just thought, that takes chutzpah to serve lard and charge for it.
I don't care what any of you
to
think.
To schmear on your bread.
I'm going to schmear this on my bread and lose weight
sure
later.
It tastes divine.
Well, you know, I want to throw something out at you. I've been seeing this on quite a few menus in a lot of mid-range restaurants, high-end restaurants, the kale Caesar salad. It just strikes me that it's a floozy in a nun's habit. You know, like the kale is ostensibly good for you, but then the whole thing is drenched in Caesar salad dressing, which we all know is calorific. Does that just sort of speak to the conflicted state of the San Francisco Bay Area diner today?
I don't think it's the calorie thing. I think that it's just like one of these ingredients that have become very trendy. So just about every restaurant has, a kale salad, like Trick Dog. They do a great job with the kale salad.
Yeah, I agree. I actually think there is this kale obsession. I am the number one soldier marching in that army. I love it. And I actually see the kale salad Caesar mashup as a way to kind of reach the mainstream. So people who maybe don't gravitate to a kale salad naturally go, oh, well, it's a Caesar salad, so I'm familiar with that flavor profile. So
try it with cheese first. You'll like it.
Yeah, but I mean, I was at a bar, ostensibly a bar, Southside Spirit House, and a bunch of us went and we ordered about 10 kale salads. They came out the size of a trough, and everyone around us was drinking and getting smashed, and we were eating our healthy kale salad and having a great time. So I welcome a healthy dish like kale.
Carolyn Jung, you've been silent here for a couple minutes. Any kale dishes you want to draw our attention to?
Well, I was actually just – I'm based in the South Bay. So I was recently at the new Centenove in Los Gatos, which is owned by the same people who do Chin Chin Wine Bar in Los Gatos. And the chef there, a native Italian, also does these wonderful house-made ravioli with ricotta. And normally they're made with spinach. But, of course, what is he doing it with? Yes, your beloved kale, and they're fabulous. It's their most popular pasta dish on the menu, too.
It's interesting that you mentioned essentially a small regional chain. There seem to be so many Bay Area restaurant chains now that are opening up satellites in different cities. They might start in San Francisco, then add one in Santa Clara or Oakland or Marin. Is the food as good at the satellites? Are you finding the quality stays up?
Oh, I think so, because these, especially as you were saying, they're small chains. They're not McDonald's or something opening up. But yeah, especially there's been this sort of synergy lately between San Francisco and the peninsula in particular. You've seen in Palo Alto, Gott's Roadside opening. You have Delfina Pizzeria that just opened in Burlingame. They're going to open in Palo Alto. You have Blue Bottle coming to Palo Alto. And at the new 49er Stadium, you're going to have Michael Mina doing bourbon steak. And so I think, I mean, they're all of those chefs are in close proximity to the peninsula and South Bay, so they can keep the quality high. And it shows.
And I think the peninsula is ripe for those type of restaurants.
Yes. It's you have an audience there that, because of Silicon Valley, has a lot of money, very sophisticated tastes. And sure, they go up to San Francisco a lot to dine, but sometimes they'd like to, you know, not have to go up on 101 or 280 and just eat in their own area.
It makes a lot of sense. Michael Bauer, if I've eaten at A16 in San Francisco, do I need to go to the one in the East Bay?
Yes, it really is different. They have a different chef, and I mean, it has the A16 sensibility. But they also have a full bar there. So Greg Lindgren, who is Shelley Lindgren's husband, did the bar program. He has Rye and Rye on the Road, and they do some amazing cocktails. So it is a lot different.
Are you seeing, Misha Helm, that people are looking for these kinds of restaurants? They're looking for something that already has the sort of the imprimatur, the brand name of something familiar, and then looking for the new iteration of it?
I think that the brand name helps people decide when there is a sea of unknown restaurants, much the way mainstream restaurants have that appeal. I think the outlying outposts, though, really appeal to the local market. So the people who live in San Mateo County that do not want to drive up to the Mission to wait in line to get pizza at Delfina, a pizzeria Delfina, I think they're delighted to have that in their own backyard. I think they're delighted to have slanted door quality food at the Asian Box down in Palo Alto, or, you know, the different locations that they have. I think it's more about being able to enjoy really great food that you know has this backing and this prodigy, but it's in your neighborhood.
But, you know, getting back to A16, I think in that case it almost does the restaurant a disservice to be called A16, because it is a different restaurant. I think often when you think of one-offs, people won't go there unless they live in the neighborhood because they think, well, I've been to A16. And so to me it's kind of like, the people who own A16 also own SPQR, totally different restaurant. And so in a way, I think it might have been better if they would have named it something other than A16. Although you do have the recognition, but then I think it does a disservice to the fact that the menu is different.
It's a sword that cuts both
ways.
Right.
People expect, like, Delfina Pizzeria is Delfina Pizzeria, and you know what you're going to get everywhere.
So we know the traffic is bad. I'm wondering if you can recommend each of you a place that San Franciscans should get in the car or get on a BART train to go check out.
Well, I would have to say Manresa, and I don't know if you can take a train there. Carolyn, maybe
It'd be
know.
A little hard.
That's in Los Gatos.
It would get you partway, but not the entire way.
And I remember when it opened, and I didn't even know where Los Gatos was. But I have made it my business to learn where Los Gatos is, because what David Kinch is doing down there at his restaurant is so exciting, and it so encapsulates what's happening with the top-tier chefs where they're really taking the idea of farm to table to a whole new level, where they have their own biodynamic garden that people grow for their produce for them. They really take the lead from what's there. And the presentation of the food, the whimsy of it. It's really exciting stuff. And I think he's really one of a kind, and it's worth the drive and the splurge to experience.
Michael Bauer?
You know, there are actually so many, because I think so much has been happening outside of San Francisco as well as in San Francisco. I mean, my top 10, I think, you know, four or five of them were outside. And, you know, Farm Shop in Larkspur is a great place to go, to get in the car to go. You know, so is Sur and Star, which is owned by the people who had Mancas. And that's in Olema. I mean, it's a beautiful drive out there. You know, even a place like Ramen Shop in Oakland, done by three guys who met at Chez Panisse, is they do some of the best noodles in the Bay Area.
And they have quite the Japanese whiskey selection.
Yes,
as well.
They do. I mean, it really is like it kind of channels that whole Japanese vibe. The whole place looks like it came from, you know, it was just lifted out of Tokyo.
Carolyn Jung?
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and pick a Japanese restaurant in the South Bay. There are lots of Japanese restaurants, of course, all over the Bay Area. But there's this gem in Saratoga called Hachijuhachi, which is it's just a really special place. You don't go there looking for chicken teriyaki or California rolls. What Jen Suzuki does there is very traditional, very old school, almost kaiseki style, but at more moderate prices. And he's sort of this zen-like figure with this very dry sense of humor. And he's very exacting in what he does. He makes his own salt. He makes his own tofu. He makes his own miso, preserves his own fish. And it's just a really wonderful experience there. So I hope more people find out about it.
Is there one particular dish that you think about when you're not there?
Everything he does is fantastic, but I would say his mackerel is fantastic. He just puts such care into it. And I am not always a mackerel fan, as I know a lot of people find the fish sometimes a little too strong. But he works his magic on it, and it is just wonderful and smoky and delicate.
All right, that's going on the list. And did I see you chomping at the bit there, Michael Bauer?
No, I think that also Wakaria in San Mateo is really another wonderful Japanese restaurant.
We keep hearing the word Japanese. Is this the it cuisine of 2014?
Well, I'm not sure. I think the fascination with Japanese food has been brewing for a while, and the chefs have been quite obsessed with Japanese food. Doug Keen from the now sadly shuttered Cyrus was very much bit by Japanese cuisine, and you can see that happening in a lot of the top-tier restaurants. There's a sensibility of the Japanese cuisine that chefs are adapting down to actual ingredients. So maybe it's just trickling down to the mainstream a little bit more. I actually think there are other cuisines, like Korean food, that's about to kind of
hasn't exploded already.
Yeah, yeah, on the Bay Area. It's obviously happened in New York.
And Los Angeles.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And I think Chinese food, you know, I'm rooting for a comeback. And people like Brandon Ju are readying a couple of – this is a chef that used to work at Bar Agricole, and he has two restaurants in the works. The first one is Shino. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a dumpling house in the Mission. But then he has a more ambitious Chinese restaurant in the works. And I'm hoping it's a hard nut to crack in San Francisco to get people to pay more money for haute Chinese cuisine. But there's people who are continually trying to elevate that cuisine and get us to pay more for it.
Yeah, it's strange. There's been nothing that's really taken the place of the Mandarin, which was in Ghirardelli Square. Nothing has had the integrity and the high-end allure of that.
Is the story different in the South Bay?
Well, in the South Bay, you find more mom-and-pop places. There's an abundance of Chinese, Korean, and of course Vietnamese, because San Jose has the largest population of Vietnamese immigrants outside of Saigon. So you don't get as many of the sort of shishi high-end places there, but you find really good neighborhood mom-and-pop places that you will go to again and again.
And I suppose the trick there in that kind of, you know, eating at joints or greasy spoons is to find out what are the dishes that they make really well.
Exactly.
So out of curiosity, what's your favorite Chinese restaurant to eat at?
Oh, gosh. Well, I will always have a soft spot in my heart for Yang Tsing because, first, I love their dim sum, and actually my wedding banquet was theirs, and I just think they do really wonderful food at a very high level, and even on super busy days and nights, they manage to just do it at a great level.
Whenever I have friends in to San Francisco, I take them to Yang Tsing.
So do I, actually. Yeah.
It's like one of the go-to places on that top 10 list.
If you're going to come to San Francisco to have dim sum, I mean, that's the place you want to take people.
Michael?
You know, it's really tough. And I'm a friend with Cecilia Chang, who used to own the Mandarin. She's 94 and still going strong. And I'm always asking her, and it's really difficult. There aren't any really great places. I think Yang Tsing is good. I think Koi Palace can be. But it was interesting. When I took her there, it was a different experience because she
special
would say – because I remember one time and they said they were kind of touting their Peking duck, and she said, is it really good? She said, I had it the last time, and it wasn't good.
She has incredibly high standards. Yeah.
If you take someone like her, and I think that's the other problem if you're Caucasian. I think maybe if you're Chinese, you may get a little different experience.
Better service,
than if
perhaps.
You're Caucasian.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is at this day and age, but.
Misha?
Yeah, absolutely. I concur. I spent Christmas Day at Yang Tsing, and I didn't want to leave. It was fantastic, and it was a very busy day for them, and they did just an exquisite job. And I have to say, this is not authentic, but I have a soft spot for Mission Chinese food. I think they do super tasty, delicious food. And my secret is that they deliver. So I don't have to get in my car. I don't have to wait on that line. I don't have to find parking in the Mission. I can just get that food delivered at home. So that's where I'll go for down and dirty Chinese food.
But it's interesting, down and dirty. You know, another word for it in the 1990s was fusion. Everyone seems to be afraid of that word now. But we do see restaurants where people are pulling from multiple cuisines to come up with something new.
Absolutely.
But it's different. Usually they're grounded in that cuisine, whereas used to they just combine things haphazardly. And I think now you see more of a refinement of what they're doing.
Absolutely. I think terms like fusion and Californian have been badly used terms that chefs don't want to embrace.
We're talking about food in the Bay Area in 2014. Tell us what's happening in your neighborhood the rest of us need to know about, unless you don't want to get the word out. But we think you do. Call us at 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed. Post on our Facebook page. Whatever your mode of communication, we are ready for your comments and questions. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Rachel Miro, sitting in for Michael Krasny. We're talking about food in the Bay Area in 2014. And perhaps you've noticed if you're a foodie and you pride yourself on being on top of what's happening on the restaurant scene, you got to get busy. It's January 2nd and you're already behind. There are too many new restaurants you have not been to. Carolyn Jung, what's tops on your list in terms of the one to visit next?
Actually, this weekend I'm going to TBD, which I'm really excited to see what they're doing there. And probably the other one that is really high on my list, speaking of fried chicken, is Box and Bells for James Siabu's new restaurant for that fried chicken I've been reading about with the dipping sauce of mayonnaise and raw oyster, which sounds amazing.
Yeah. Pretty much raw oyster on anything.
Exactly.
I'll try it.
Why not start the year like that, right?
Exactly. Michael Bauer?
You know, there's so many that are, you know, kind of in the works. Penrose, which is Charlie Halliwell's new restaurant in Oakland. There's Alta, which is Daniel Patterson's new restaurant kind of in the Twitter area. There is Alla Romano, which just opened. I was surprised and impressed, although I've only been there once, of Nico, which is a French restaurant that's on Outer Sacramento. But it's like they just keep coming.
There are so many.
It's really hard.
I'm not
going to
say stop, but whoa, it's overwhelming. Misha Hall?
Well, I was just saying off air, Leader House is a place that has just opened. I'm not exactly sure if they're officially hard open, but I believe they are. This is a high-end Chinese restaurant, very authentic, taking space in the Payne Mansion in Pacific Heights. So it really – and they're trying to replicate kind of the pomp and circumstance as well of a Tommy Toys or these old restaurants that no longer exist. Two floors of an old house, and the news, the early reports that I've got out of people who have had the chance to get there say that it's quite impressive, and it's really catering to traveling Chinese businessmen. So if I'm curious to see when we talk about authentic high-end cuisine, how that turns out. And then Verbena, which is another new restaurant that just opened up before the end of the year. It's the second restaurant from Sean Baker of Gather in Berkeley, and he is a chef who really celebrates vegetables, but he also serves meat and seafood as well.
And that's in San Francisco?
It's on Polk Street. And again, early reports say it's definitely exciting food, and definitely planning on checking it out in the next week.
It's interesting that you mentioned vegetables. We talked briefly about kale earlier in the hour, but, you know, the Bay Area has fabulous, spectacular produce, some of the best in the country. Who's doing what and why with vegetables?
Well, I that's a tough question because I think everyone is doing something. I think that finally it's kind of happening that vegetables are moving to the center of the plate and the protein is becoming, you know, less conspicuous than it was. And it is because we have great produce. I remember talking to April Bloomfield, who has, you know, Spotted Pig in New York and has been spending most of her time here at Tosca Cafe. And that's what she mentioned. That's what everyone mentions is that, you know, you get produce here you can't find anywhere else. So why not celebrate it?
Anyone else want to add to that?
I think we're incredibly spoiled here, and we know it. You know, so many of these restaurants and chefs these days also either have their own farm or partnering with someone to grow their own produce to their exact specifications. And I think the diners these days are really lucky to sort of come along for the ride where they're being educated not only about a certain vegetable, but always to use it from its seeds to its blossoms to its roots. So it's very exciting to see what chefs are doing these days with the non-protein side of the plate.
Absolutely. The restaurant Ubuntu in Napa, which is no longer open, really, I think, set the charge for vegetable cuisine. This was really not about not having meat. It was really about celebrating vegetables. And a lot of chefs that have come out of that kitchen, Kim Alter, that's now at Plum, Aaron London, who he has a restaurant in the works that he's very tight-lipped about, but that's going to open this year someplace in Hayes Valley. And it's not going to be entirely vegetable, vegetarian, but I imagine it's going to be very exciting cuisine. I think whenever I see a chef has Ubuntu on their resume, I get excited because I know that they have this extra sensibility and expertise around treating vegetables in a very exciting way.
Well, we're getting a lot of calls, but I'm still going to throw out the number one more time, 866-733-6786. Let's turn now to Dee Dee in Berkeley.
Hi. I was just calling to say I had a wonderful birthday dinner at Shitaro Cameo's restaurant. It just opened on 4th Street, and I'm not sure if I'm saying it correctly, Isari's, but it's traditional Japanese, and it was really fun and delicious.
Good to hear.
Yeah, no, that took over the place of Oshime, and I have not been there. It's only been open about a month.
Wow. So you are on top of it, Dee Dee.
Well played.
Well played. Moving now to Nancy in Berkeley.
Hi. I wanted to give a recommendation and a comment. The best chicken I've ever had in this area is at Miller's East West Delicatessen on Polk Street. It's inexpensive and it's fabulous. And the thing I really wanted to say is that my friends and I are sick about or disappointed or disconcerted about the reviews of the restaurants in the Chronicle that none of us can afford to eat at. It's just like playing to the 1%, the high rents, the she-she food, and, you know, they're, most of the 90% of us can't afford these $3 and $4 sign restaurants, and I think it's about time that, you know, you review restaurants for the rest of us.
Well, let me answer that by saying, yes, I do the high end, because if you're going to spend that money, then you want to know where to go. However, in the Thursday paper, we have a less expensive review. We have bargain bites. We have bar bites. So we do cover those. I don't personally, but we have other people who do. And then every year we come up with our bargain bites guide.
Well, this also raises a good point that nearly everybody at this table, I think, has, you know, lots and lots of recommendations for you know, a great joint to hit up for X or Y or Z. Misha Halm, do you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there are – it depends what you want. I mean, I go to Super Duper when I want a great burger and I don't want to spend –
And where's Super Duper?
Well, there's multiple locations. There's one in the Castro. There's one in the Marina. There's one now at the Metreon. There's probably some in the South Bay, yes?
I think
Not
so.
Not sure.
Yeah.
There's a lot. There's a lot. There. Anywhere there is a popular destination foot traffic, there's a Super Duper. I'm a big fan of Tacolicious when I want – or a Nopalito, which both have really great, clean, sustainable, tasty Mexican food. And I'm a big fan of just grazing. My favorite thing to do is go down to the ferry building and start at one end of the hall and just eat my way silly to the other side, maybe stopping at Bocalone for a sandwich or a grilled cheese sandwich or having donuts along the way, cheese. It's a wonderful place to fill up on incredible food.
Carolyn Jung, I find when I'm, say, on reporting trips in Silicon Valley, I love to go to Chinese bakeries and, you know, just point at different things in the case. And I never come away disappointed. And, you know, it typically doesn't cost me any more than $10.
Yeah, because you can always, I mean, even if you don't exactly know what something is, it's only a couple bucks to try it. And most times you're pleasantly surprised and you find something new to love. There's so many little bakeries like that, Japanese bakeries, Middle Eastern ones down in the South Bay. So it's always a great way to sort of dip your toe in the water of a new cuisine without having to commit to a full meal.
Michael, any treats you want to share with us?
You know, I still find year after year my favorite place for burritos is La Taqueria. I was just there a couple weeks ago.
What kind do you get?
Carnitas.
Carnitas. Yeah. Excellent. Ah, that's one of my favorites as well. Thank you, Nancy. Those were great points. Moving on to Nick in Mill Valley.
Nick? Hello?
Hi. Yes, you're on the air.
All right, I gotta put in a good word for Garaje in South of Market at 3rd and Bryant.
Mm-hmm. What do you like to get there?
The seared ahi tacos and carnitas street style tacos. They also have excellent beer on tap.
Well, you heard it here first. Thank you so much, Nick. Leslie writes, I'd love to hear from your guests on their recommendations for places to dine with children in strollers. Mm. Yeah, there are a lot of eateries where there just isn't a lot of room to move.
It's a problem. It's definitely San Francisco is not full of a lot of great family-friendly restaurants. However, I think if you go, I take my family to Pachi's Pizza, and they have one in Noe Valley, they have one in Hayes Valley, they have one out in the Sunset, and they are very accommodating. They're small, but they're accommodating to families. There's on Cortland Avenue, there's the beautiful little tiny takeout place, and they're very kid-friendly, even though they're small. So I think you need to just – you have to find the places where they welcome families. It's That's really the tip.
Yeah, it's tough. I ran something on the blog of someone who had a problem with a restaurant, a very popular restaurant, because they were basically kicked out because they had a stroller. And things are so tight that it's really difficult. And so I always say, you know, Chinese restaurants are always very family friendly, or Vietnamese, most of the Asian restaurants. But it's really tough with strollers.
You know, it strikes me that whether you're talking about La Taqueria, you were just mentioning the other moment, or La Conda, you know, a heavily trafficked Mission Italian restaurant, that if you have kids, show up at 5:30. Right. You know, there's you don't have to wait as long. You may not even have to get a reservation, and there's room for that stroller.
Right.
Well, I will also say, if you want a little entertainment, you can go down to the mall, the Westfield Mall, and go to MY China, which is Martin Yan's restaurant. They have a noodle puller who is on display, and that is more entertaining to a toddler than anything you can see on TV. And that'll keep them occupied while you're waiting for your food, and it's a big enough restaurant. And it's in a mall, and I'm sure they see families come in and out of the restaurant all the time.
And the noodles are very good there, especially the scissor-cut noodles with the wild boars.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to have to listen back to the whole show.
I would also say, hey, that's a perfect time to take a short drive down to the peninsula, because unlike San Francisco, parking is always a little bit easier there. A lot of restaurants have their own parking lots there, so you might not even need the stroller. You just carry the baby into the restaurant.
And va-bam, you're done. Tivon tweets, I'm interested in late-night eating places, mostly. Bangkok Thai in Berkeley is open till 2 a.m. Any other suggestions?
Not to 2 a.m., but Tosca Cafe is open late. Nopa is open late.
The Broken Record in the Excelsior is open late.
I know there are a lot of others, but until I have my list.
Yeah, I know. And it's an interesting thing. A lot of restaurants open up and they say, we're going to stay open late. And we're going to do this. And then you circle back 3 months and they said, business was dead. We had to close at 10 because we can't keep a staff here till 1 a.m.
That is hard to believe. With all these hipster techies moving into the Bay Area, who are presumably coding well into the wee hours, you would think they would be out and about looking for food.
They have cafeterias and snacks.
There you go.
No reason to leave.
And they're falling asleep at their desks.
That's right.
But it's true. The whole tech scene is not that great for restaurants, as far as certainly not lunch and a lot of dinners, because they do have the food that's free, and so they don't go out as much.
Although Alta California, which is the new Daniel Patterson restaurant that's in mid-market, that's squarely trying to cater to the Twitters and the Square employees, they say that they're going to be open late. And Ben Yu's Corey Lee is opening a new place called Monsieur Benjamin, and that's going to be in Hayes Valley. And one of the things that they're touting is that they're going to have a late night menu as well. So I think people in the business realize that there's an opportunity there, but only a few will really stick to their guns and pull it off.
And I suppose, Carol and Jen, the truth is a lot of that money is coming through on the business end of the restaurant business.
Yes, there's been a lot of investment by Silicon Valley people in the restaurant industry. For instance, you have, of course, Charlie Ayers Calafia in Palo Alto. He was the very first executive chef at Google, and he has a lot of investors in his restaurant. You have Lisa Rohr of Centinove, who used to work also at Google, and Chris Kelly, who was the first general counsel for Facebook. He's partnering with Bradley Ogden to open a number of ventures, and also Steve Chow, who created Google Street. He is an investor in Spice Kit with Bill Pasio, because they were former roommates at Stanford University. So you see a lot of that money flowing definitely into the business side and helping to spark new enterprises.
New enterprises. Anne asks, I haven't been to Betelnut on Union Street in San Francisco for years. My friend wants to lunch there today. What should I order? It's kind of a pop quiz.
You know, that's tough. It was Betelnut, and then for a very short time it was Hutong, and they changed back to Betelnut, and I have not been back since they changed, so I can't really say.
I will say, though, if it's back on the menu, the beggar's purse, the chicken.
Oh, the chicken.
The chicken in the lettuce cups, correct?
And they're They're green beans.
And they're fried, walked fried green beans.
Let's turn back to the phones now. John in Oakland.
Oh, hi. I was calling. I just wanted to say I had a great experience at a new restaurant that opened up about a month ago in Jack London Square, and they do a great paella and have a great sangria. It's called Venga Paella.
Venga Paella.
It's a really nice atmosphere. The paella is really nice, and they have some nice tapas as well.
We do seem to be seeing a lot of restaurants that may not necessarily be Spanish in nature, but sort of have the small dishes, the tapas concept at play.
Right. I think that's been big in the Bay Area for at least probably almost a decade.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, and it's as strong as ever. I think that's kind of that trend kind of actually started in the Bay Area.
Absolutely. But now we're actually seeing a turn to very authentic tapas restaurants, or Spanish restaurants. So we have Duende in Oakland, which is doing Spanish cuisine.
Some great dishes there.
Yeah.
I wish I could think of them off the top of my head.
And we have Michael Chiarello, who has Coqueta on the waterfront down on the Embarcadero, and he is doing straight ahead Spanish tapas and large plates. So, yes, I think we adopted the style of eating of tapas 10 years ago. Cindy Paulson at Fog City Diner really brought that kind of grazing cuisine into the fore. But now it's interesting that we're actually we're having a little love affair with Spanish food.
So I suppose Japanese, Spanish food, we are actually naming cuisines that seem to be taking hold for the new year.
Yeah, except like in the place in Coqueta, he's not trying to duplicate a Spanish restaurant. He's using the Northern California sensibility. But by doing that, I've had like two people that I really respect who are Spanish and know food really well who say it's like the only restaurant they've been to in the United States that kind of feels authentic. And it's not because he's trying to. It's because he's, you know, it's the sensibility that we're talking about.
Well, thank you so much, John, for that recommendation. Let's turn now to Sean in Walnut Creek.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for taking my call. I live in Walnut Creek, and my wife and I got kind of burned out on the Walnut Creek food scene about 7 years ago, and it spent most of our time taking BART to the city for dinner. And I was wondering if you could suggest anything in the Far East Bay, Walnut Creek, or north or south from that you guys like or could turn us back onto, or anything we kind of haven't visited in the last few years. And I'll take my call up the air.
Thank you so much.
You know, I think that probably there's a reason you haven't, and I don't think that much has happened, unfortunately. And it's strange because it's like the peninsula. It's ripe for – it's got a lot of money. There could be some really good restaurants, but it's really tough.
Hmm. Yeah. I guess not every place is on fire the way
I mean, a lot of good neighborhood
Oakland
restaurants. But yeah. I mean, restaurants that you'd actually want to get in the car and drive a long ways. There's not a lot in Walnut Creek in that area.
Walt asks, how has Yelp and others of its ilk either accelerated or modified restaurants' efforts to create a distinctive winning approach and build the right clientele for their approach?
I'm not sure.
I'm not entirely sure. Yeah. I guess the idea is sort of, you know, now that Yelp has been out a few years and other things, other online services, you know, how are restaurants trying to target people who might be specifically interested in what they have to offer?
That's tough. I mean, I think that it initially changed the restaurant scene, I think. And I think that, you know, there's some valid comments that people make. But I think in many cases, if you look at the ratings, they're always like 4, 3.5, 4.5. It's almost becomes white noise because people get on there with, you know, a certain point of view, and it's usually about the service. So I feel like it's having less impact than it did maybe 5 years ago, but that's just my opinion.
Well, I would think the other piece of that question is how restaurants are really reaching out and becoming appealing to their consumer. And I think that is not Yelp, but those are the restaurants themselves that are using social media to reach the consumer. So that's having a Facebook page, having someone who is actively Instagramming and uploading restaurant menus and photos and having a dialogue, an interactive dialogue with their customer base. I think that's the kind of thing that savvy restaurants are doing to use to reach the consumer.
And it's really interesting because you're right. In restaurants, for the most part, are still behind. Like when I do reviews or when I do my top 100, we still ask that they send a menu. They fax a menu because if you go online,
they're not there.
They aren't there. Or you know, it's a menu 3 or 4 months old. They don't do it daily or weekly or whenever they change their menus.
It also seems like we're still fixated on the idea of celebrity chefs, and we want them to take a lot of time away from the work that they do in the kitchen to be tweeting or, you know, sending us their favorite burger joint in San Francisco. It seems like something we haven't quite fully worked out yet.
Well, I think we always want chefs to be everything to us. You know, when we go to that restaurant, we want them to be in the kitchen. We want them to come out to say hello to us. And at the same time, we want to see them on Top Chef, you know, in our own living rooms. But of course, you know, it's one of the chef, being a chef is one of the toughest, most time consuming jobs there are. And, you know, so many of them don't even have time to spend with their own families. So we demand a lot of them, but we also have to realize that, you know, they're very limited in what they can do, and they're doing the best that they can in allocating their time and resources.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, I think that's where an app like Chef Feed mm-hmm. really comes in and fills a need. This is a place where it's really chefs giving their recommendations on where they love to eat, either in their city or in other cities that they visit. And truthfully, the work is really being done by the Chef's Feed. Their own employees are doing this. But that's another way. If you really want to know where your favorite chef likes to eat, you're probably going to find it in a third-party site like that.
Although it's kind of interesting because so many chefs will say, who are actually in the restaurant every night, say, I don't have time to go out, so I don't really know where.
Exactly, yeah.
Or they'd like to go out at 2 a.m., but there just aren't enough restaurants open in the Bay Area.
But I think when we talked about earlier Judy Rogers, I mean, I think that's why she was so amazing in that she never did the celebrity chef thing. She became a celebrity because her book was so solid. And because her food was so solid. And it was kind of, I think that's the reason she was so respected, because she was in the restaurant. She didn't do multiple restaurants, but she did what she did very well and basically started the trend of the wood oven for other things than pizza. And, you know, of course, the roast chicken, the Caesar salad, I mean, all the things that she did.
Patty writes, Vesta in Redwood City, delicious, fresh, innovative, a must-go. Brian says Bon Thai in Orinda is a hidden neighborhood gem. Best Thai food in the East Bay, or possibly all of the Bay Area. Teresa on Facebook recommends the Dirty Pigeon Diner at Encanto. And then Mark emails, the rise of wealthy mainland Chinese residents has created demand for authentic Chinese food from different provinces other than Canton or Hong Kong. Think of the long lines at Z and Y in Chinatown. The success of the spices chain, especially the one in Oakland, Pearl and Kitchen in Millbrae, and the reopening of China Village in Albany. This raises a good question. It's almost silly to say, you know, do you want to eat Chinese? We're talking about multiple different cuisines.
But it's so interesting because things become homogenized here. Look at Italian. It wasn't until the last 5 or 10 years that we started actually seeing regional Italian rather than the greatest hits from the north and south. And Chinese food has been very much like that.
Sadhana writes, I'm Indian and I am a fairly good Indian food cook, so I never eat Indian food outside. But lately I've been visiting Gajali in the Mission on Valencia. It's very good food, kind of like my mom's cooking. Well, that's a strong endorsement.
I've had other people who are from India who have also raved about that restaurant.
We do hear a lot of chefs talking about their grandmothers. They're reaching back into their own ethnic heritage to find something that feels authentic.
Yeah, I think that's probably, to me, the most exciting trend. Because, again, before everyone was doing Kalai Tao, or they were afraid to break out or to use, you know, what they grew up with. And now they've been given permission. And that's the reason we're seeing such wonderful things like what you see at Bar Tartine or what Corey Lee's doing at Benu. Very high-end, but it has a soul that a lot of the food missed before that time.
Absolutely. I think Hopscotch in the East Bay does the same thing. People are finally realizing they can kind of shed their European, French cooking school playbook a little bit and kind of infuse it with the foods that they're passionate, you know, they grew up with.
And you have people like Murad Lalou at Aziza doing the Moroccan. There are just so many interesting things happening when they use what they know.
Well, I'm going to ask you all, because we have so little time left, just to tell me about one dish that has just been you've been fixated on it. You can't stop thinking about it. You have to go back to get it. Carolyn Jung?
Well, it's not really a dish, and I do have a sweet tooth, so I would say the Queen Amon at B Patisserie. It's you talk about a bargain. I mean, it's like probably $3, and it is such an amazing buttery, sweet, flaky pastry that is going to put a smile on your face for days and beyond. So if you haven't tried one, you got to in the new year.
Probably the shrimp sashimi at Akiko, which they present one way, then they bring out the fried head.
Well, this is unusual. I just had this dish at Alta, California, and it's a hen on the wood mushroom saute over cracked wheat porridge and baby turnip. And it doesn't sound like something you would crave, but it has almost that cream of wheat comfort food consistency, and it is so earthy, and it's the kind of food that surprises you, and I want to go back and have some.
Well, if you haven't been taking notes during this hour, you're going to have to go to kqed.org/forum and listen back to the whole show again. I certainly will. Thank you again, Michael Bauer of the San Francisco Chronicle, Carolyn Jung of foodgal.com, and Misha Hulm of the Zagat Bay Area Restaurant Guide. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Jim Bennett. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our interns are Keelan Cronin, Nick Zabrowski, Victor Valle, Angela Johnston, and Aaron Newport. I'm Rachel Miro, in for Michael Krasny, and you've been listening to Forum. Thank you for joining us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.